Good evening and welcome to tonight's Monroe City Council meeting. This is the regular business meeting and study session for January 2018. The time right now is 7:02 p.m. Happy New Year and welcome everybody. Ms. Atkinson, would you please call the roll?
Certainly. Council members present and establishing a quorum are Scarborough, Cutaback, Hanford, Rasmussen, Camp, and Gamble.
Thank you. And did we hear from Councilmember Davis?
I did not.
Okay, so we will announce for the record when he comes in. Thank you. And will everybody please rise and join in the same procedures?
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you, everybody. The first item we have on the agenda this evening is under announcements and presentations. This is the first item, it's AB18-001, presentation, swearing in ceremony for Sergeant Spencer Robinson. Chief Windsor.
We're going to do the nip first.
Okay. So we're going to go ahead, Council, unless there's objection, we're going to switch the two announcements and presentations. We're going to start off with AB18-002, presentation, commemoration ceremony for K-9 Officer Nip. Chief Windsor.
Thank you to all those attendants, Mayor Thomas, Council members, family, and friends of those being recognized tonight. On the 7/26, after a long and valiant flight, K-9 Newt was laid to rest following health complications. In his 3.5 years of service, K-9 Newt and his handler, Officer Jason Sutherland, amassed an impressive record from the apprehension of dangerous criminals to locating lost children. K-9 Newt was well known in our community with his participation in events such as the National Night Out and the numerous K-9 visits and demonstrations at our schools, businesses, and groups visiting our department. He loved his handler, Officer Southern, always wanted to be close by his side. Every time he was left in the vehicle, we all heard his cries, "Please take me with you." K-9 Newt won the respect of all law enforcement officers and throughout the region, as well as the hearts of the members of the community in which he served, and he will be greatly missed. I would say, add just a little bit here, real quickly, is that K-9 Newt was a somewhat small for a German Shepherd tracking dog, but he had a hell of a large one. This is a plaque. And this is a proclamation that the mayor would like to read at this time.
Thank you. City of Monroe Executive Order, Mayor Jeffrey Thomas, titled Police K-9 Nuke, Flag Lowering to Half Staff, effective date December 29, 2017. Whereas Police K-9 Nuke was a dedicated and loyal partner to Officer Jason Southard and the Monroe Police Department, and whereas K-9 Nuke served the Monroe Police Department and the Monroe community for 3 years, and whereas K-9 Nuke fought to uphold the integrity and safety of the Monroe Police Department, member of the community, and his handler, Officer Jason Southard. And whereas K-9 Newt diligently and faithfully performed the duties and obligations of his post in tracking and pursuing suspects without complaint. And whereas K-9 Newt's end of watch was Tuesday, December 26, 2017, with his beloved handler and family at his side. Now, therefore, I, Jeffrey Thomas, Mayor of the City of Monroe, Washington, do hereby order and direct that the U.S. flag be lowered to half staff on all city and buildings and property from Friday, December 29, 2017 through Tuesday, January 2, 2018, in honor of Eddie Calvin Duke LaLouche, and encourage all to keep the Monroe Police Department Officer Jason Southard and his family in their hearts and prayers during this difficult time, day of this 29th day of December 2017. Thank you very much.
Thank you, sir. Okay, the next item we have is the promotion of Spencer Robinson to the rank of sergeant. First of all, I'd like to thank Judge Rosano for officiating. And Spencer, why don't you come up there? Sergeant Spencer Robinson began his career with the City of Monroe in 2005 as a lateral police officer. Having served with the Washington State Patrol for 4 years, he was assigned as a detective in the investigative unit in January 2007. Sergeant Robinson has consistently proven himself to be a valuable asset to the department through his work, quality, and high work ethic. His first major case as a detective involved a break-in at a local pawn shop in which 11 guns were taken. Through his investigation, many were recovered with multiple arrests. He was also the lead detective on a major child homicide case that led him to months of exhaustive investigation and research. Spencer had a great heart for the children of this household, trying his best to bring justice to this case. He has also brought recognition to this department through the creation of the Monroe Police Department's Shop of the Cop in 2014. This program has brought a lot of goodwill and positive response for our department, with an even bigger impact on underprivileged children and the families in our community. Judge, would you please swear in the future sergeant?
I will do so.
Thank you.
I, Spencer Robinson.
I, Spencer Robinson.
Do solemnly swear.
Do solemnly swear.
That I will support.
That I will support.
The Constitution of the United States. The
Constitution of the United States.
And the Constitution and laws of the State of Washington.
And the Constitution and the laws of the State of Washington.
And the ordinances of the City of Monroe.
And the ordinances of the City of Monroe.
And that I will faithfully discharge the duties.
And that I will faithfully discharge the duties.
Of Sergeant.
Of Sergeant.
Of the City of Monroe Police Department.
Of the City of Monroe Police Department.
To the best of my abilities.
To the best of my abilities.
Congratulations.
Spencer's family, wife, and Nellie is joining her tonight. I assume she'll be pinning his badge on. It appears as if he has his best, so make sure it goes all good.
Thank you.
still under announcements and presentations is item number three. This is AB 18003, presentation for research. This is the Snyder County Emergency Radio System. And we have Mr. Stanford.
I believe it's going to be Ralph Cruzy this evening, but he hasn't arrived yet. He's on his way from Lake Stevens.
Okay. Then we'll go ahead and move on to comments from citizens. This is time set aside for members of the audience to speak to the City Council on any issue related to the City of Monroe, something about the matter of the subject of public hearing. Is there anybody that would like to come forward to speak to the Council this evening? Anybody that signed up? Is there anybody that would like to come forward to speak to the City Council this evening? Seeing none, we'll go ahead and move on to the consent agenda. Councilmember Rasmussen, would you move the consent agenda?
Second.
I have a motion to approve the consent agenda from Councilmember Rasmussen, second from Councilmember Cutback. Any discussion on the motion to approve the consent agenda? Seeing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed. Motion passes 6-0. Thank you. We're going to go ahead and move on to new business. This is new business item number 1, AB 18-008, Council seating arrangements for the 2018-2019 years. And Ms. Atkinson, oh, you're the contact on it, but I am the presenter on it. So the way this works is, according to seniority, council has the ability on certain years to go ahead and select different seats. Is there anybody that's interested in moving seats? Councilmember Scarborough would like to move.
Aye.
I know that's just a halo above your head. So we'll see you tomorrow.
I've got some ideas in here, so I
might
be right here.
Not here.
Okay, so is there anybody that's interested in moving seats? I'm saying none, so we'll go ahead and move on to the next item on the agenda, the seats will stay in where they are. We will, instead of going on to the next item on the agenda, we'll go ahead and backtrack to announcements and presentations, item number 3. I believe so. We have representatives from CSRS here now. So again, this is AB 18-003, presentation CSRS, Snohomish County Emergency Radio System. We're having technical difficulties. We have a printout of the material. Actually, it's in the packets. Thank you. So what we're going to do is go ahead and encourage the council members to open up the packets. Project it working in the near future. We'll go ahead and do it off of this. Do you have the packet, maybe?
If I can run out to the truck and get the my packet for it, I have other things, but not that.
Is it that brand new? Yeah, that's fine. Okay.
Yeah.
So we fixed it. We removed the cover.
Okay.
Oh, yeah.
Hey.
Okay.
Hey.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. If Brad isn't at a meeting, we need Ben here at least. I need to be in the council.
Which Ben?
Right. Oh, well, it's not here. Okay.
Councilmember Gamble has volunteered to do that. Is there a motion to appoint him? I'll see.
I know that we approve that.
There's a first, is there a second?
More work for Gamble, yes.
Yeah. Yes, while we're waiting, is it okay if I pass out a resolution that our chair supported?
Yes, sir. Please go ahead and hand it to our city administrator record. There should be plenty there for you. Thank you very much for your patience as we work out our technical difficulties here.
Okay. Thank you, Councilmember. I am Rob Cruzy, and I'm the Chief Administrative Officer for SERS. And tonight I brought with me Craig Boyd. He is our supervisor for the line technicians. And tonight I want to talk to you briefly about SERS, what it is, where it's been, where it is now, and where it's going. SERS is an emergency radio system that all the first responders use with the county. It works with the 911 dispatch center. 911 gets a call and they dispatch it to the first responders. SERS was founded in 1999 with an interlocal agreement with the South Snohomish County cities, Everett and Marysville, and later Fire District 1. We have 22 towers throughout Snohomish County. We have one in King County, Kitsap County, Island County, and Skagit County. We cover 940 square miles of the urban-suburban area of Snohomish County. That's a little overview of the towers. We serve 50 agencies and 30 communities within the county. And we have 95% coverage within that urban-suburban area. The system was built out between 2001 and 2006, and we have interoperability with the surrounding counties that we have in King County and some of the Skagit County. We also have the state patrol and the federal agencies. As I mentioned earlier, we are the radio system that the dispatch system uses with the county. Do you all think that you understand that, or should I go through it?
We're okay.
Good. Same time. Okay. SERS carries a load for the system. There are approximately 19,000 transmissions that happen daily on the SERS system. We handle about 7 million transactions for push and talks per year. That dispatch centers, the two of them, they're now combined into one, handle approximately 1 million calls for service per year. So basically, for every call for service, there's about 7 radio transmissions that go along with that. The SERS has known for a while that the system is going to become obsolete and its end of life will be in 2020. Back about 2011, 12, maybe 13, we started stockpiling some of the parts that we thought would be useful to have if they were not available. When other agencies or organizations like SERS would upgrade to a new system, we would try to get their equipment that they had and keep that so that as time went on and they weren't available, we could put them into service. We've been notified by the manufacturer for our radio system that the part support for the system will no longer be available, no longer be produced after 2020. They will still continue to give us support as they can for the system, but the parts will be soon be dwindling. We have done upgrades to the system. In 2015, we upgraded the east loop of our system. We have two loops. One is here on mainly on the inland side of the county. The other is the side that covers the Edmonds, the waterfront area. The current system that we have here is only 3 or 4 years old, and the original system was put in 2001 is the microwave system that we have that covers Island, Kitsap, and the western edge of the county. We also, in 2016, upgraded our core, which is the brain of the system, and we upgraded our dispatch consoles. One of the reasons we upgraded dispatch consoles then was the consoles had already reached their life expectancy and the parts to repair them were no longer available. We had to go to eBay to buy parts to repair the consoles prior to the upgrade. We did the upgrade, that's been completed. We've done two upgrades to our infrastructure within the last 3 years. We did one in 2016. It was a 7.16 motor upgrade, and we are right now in the process of completing the final upgrade to take us through 2020 when they will no longer provide support. The defunding depends on servers and not only in critical situations, but in everyday situations. In everyday situations, we somewhat have reached our capacity with our system. We have 10 talk groups on our system that we utilize, and if we have a major incident, that takes resources away from that. When they had the 530 landslide, during that incident, we had 200 radios that were being used throughout the system for just the OSO incident. We were really fortunate at that time. We had one of our staff members that lived in Darrington. And so everything that was on the east side, that came from the east side, he was able to take care of all of their radio needs and service radios then. The other thing that happened is we had Linwood Fire, major apartment fire they had a major fire on the Everett Marina not long ago. We also had an active shooter. When those occur, they tax the system. And as the system becomes more and more taxed, we're running out of our capacity. When it was built in 1999, 2000, the population of the Snohomish County was considerably smaller than it is now. So with the growth in the county, we've reached that max capacity, and it's only going to continue to grow in the future. We use what's called a trunking system. There's two types of radios, there's a conventional and a trunking. And I'm not a tech guy, I'm a retired cop. And so for me, push, talk, let up, listen is my technology. But I do know that with the conventional system, it's like going to the market and you look around and you pick a teller you think is going to be quick. And if you're lucky, they are. If they're not, you wait and learn. You go to the bank, you don't worry about it because it's one line. You walk up to the front, the arrow goes click, you go to the next person in the line. That's the way the trunking system works. So as you are talking, the system automatically allows for that automatic change so you're not having delays. And it actually takes your capacity and doubles it. So when we went to the system, we had good capacity. Its capacity is now reached its maximum. It's an analog system, and we need to convert from that to a new system because technology has changed in 20 years. And a new system, the digital system, will actually, just by changing to that, double the capacity we have right now, which should help us through the next phase of our system. One of the problems we have with getting additional channels is they're not available. And even if they were available, we have issues with our partners to the north, the Canadians, because they also have the 800 megahertz frequencies. And we can't interfere with their radio system. They can't interfere with our radio system. The radio system needs to be replaced. It's an aging system. It is like all technology, it has a lifespan. Its lifespan was 20 years, and the 20-year mark is coming up in 2020. There's a global lack of parts that are available for the current system. We're hoping that we have enough that we set aside that we can continue on through that period of time when we're going through our build-up. New technology is important because we need to get greater capacity. We need to have a system that is supported by the manufacturer. We need to have a system that we can rely upon. And the new system will the system's not going to die at 2020. It's not going to quit working all of a sudden. But it's going to be over a period of time where, as issues develop, parts are no longer available. Currently, with our microwave system that's on the west loop, we've already, the manufacturer does not produce the parts for that microwave system. When we have something that breaks, we have to put a replacement in, send the part into a third-party vendor, and hope that that third-party vendor can replace it. With the new system, we will not only double our capacity, but we will have the capability of having those parts available. Question that comes up frequently is why can't we use cell phones? There's many good reasons. Number one, the cell phone system is not as redundant or as resilient as the two-way LAN mobile radio system is. The every one of our towers has a battery backup system that's capable of running for between 8 and 12 hours, and every single one of the towers has a generator backup that kicks in when we lose power. We have four towers that are in the high altitude that are off of land power, that we have redundant generators on them so that every 3 days it switches from one generator to the next generator so that we can extend the life of the generator over a longer period of time. And so that if one of the generators fails, we have a redundant backup system for it. We also have portable generators that we can take to those sites in case both generators fail. The cell phone companies do have capacity for that, but if there were a disaster that hit, their ability to move from the storage area that they have to bring them is limited, and the time that they could run them is limited. We have in each one of our towers, we have enough fuel to run for weeks at a time. I showed this slide to our board, and they said, you know, those are all nice things to have, they're really good, but what do they really mean? And what they really mean is the safety of the community. We don't want to have our batteries on our portable radios run out while we're responding to a call. We want to have a reliable radio system. We want to have quality voice so that when we talk between either ourselves or with our dispatch center, that we understand and hear our talking. Our system, I was with Marysville for about 14 years. I was on the system before Marysville, before it was Servers. So Marysville had their own system. We went to Servers, the DNR system became better. And I've worked on 5 other systems because I've been around for a long time. This by far is the best system I've worked on. I've worked on LA City, LA County. I've worked on King County. I've worked on the two here, Marysville and Servers. And I've worked on one in Western Washington. And again, the quality of our voice transmission and the reliability is better than it was at any of the other ones. There are less dead spots in the urban, suburban area in Snohomish County than there were in LA City. And that may be hard to believe, but it's true. The other thing is that the cell phones have a smaller coverage area. And the cell phone systems for redundancy, if you lose a cell tower, you lose capability of communicating in that area to an extent. My oldest son is still in California, and they just had the fires down there, and he lives in the Santa Clarita Valley. A couple of towers went down, they lost cell service for a while because they didn't have the back. If we lose a tower, with our system, the transmission loops back around the other direction. you fill in so that you're still getting the signal and you're getting it from a different direction. The other thing is that back in 12, 14 years ago, Hurricane Katrina, Hurricane Katrina hit Houston and wiped out the cell phone system. They made huge improvements. A few months ago, another hurricane came, wiped out the cell phone system. It's because they don't have that redundancy, that built-in redundancy that we have. The cell system currently does not provide for the mission critical dispatching and transmissions that ours does. So, what's the benefit of a new system? The benefit of a new system is reduce the risk of failure. Equipment supported by the manufacturer. It's going to double our capacity, allow us to grow within the county, and it's going to improve the interoperability with other agencies. King County and Snohomish County are pretty much interoperable now with our systems. We have to do some changing of channels and frequencies when we go back and forth between the two communities. With the new system, it should be set up so that we should have what's called seamless roaming, and we should be able to go from our Snohomish County all the way down to Olympia without ever having to turn a button on the radio, so that we have interoperability with all of these systems. And that's very important in our regional incidents. Timeline for new radio system. We started, this show is starting our bid process in 2017. We actually started much earlier than that. We hired a international consultant for radio systems they are international, one of their offices is in Linwood. And we've been using them. They did a study to find out what our system was. They queried all of the users of the system to find out what they needed in the system and to see what we needed for a new system. They evaluated the system we have so that it was deteriorating, aging, and maybe end of life in 2020. And they came up with some recommendations. We started a bid process last year with the county. We invited representatives from all of the disciplines to come on that pre-RFP committee to review the what we were looking at, make recommendations. We had people from that were on the service board, not on the service board, people that were in agencies that were, there was phase one and phase two of the radio system. SERS is phase one, the other systems through the county are phase two. We invited people from phase two to be involved in this as well, because SERS has recognized that we are not a county representative board, and we need to be a county representative board. We started with the process of the RFP by bringing in people that need to be represented, that aren't represented on our board, and we did that. We worked with the county in publishing a RFP, which was published in November of last year. One of the things that we did in our RFP is we required vendors that were interested in putting bids or making proposals, that they had to come and look at our system to see how it was set up, to look at what our infrastructure was, and if they didn't show up, they would not be able to bid. We had, December 11th, we had four large agencies. There were 13 people that showed up representing four large agencies. There was Motorola, Harris, EF Johnson, and Kenwood. We took them, we split them up, put them to every one of our sites, except for the high sites, because some of those were already snowed in. We made plans for that ahead of time. We partnered with Snowpack, and we took drones out to those high sites, and we photographed and videoed the drones all the way up to the towers,
so they would see exactly what was on the towers in close-ups. We took videos of inside the towers so they could see, so that they can give us what we want is a good, reliable proposal. That bid, the proposal should be in February of this year, and we're hoping then that we can make a selection on a vendor and then go into contract negotiations, design review, and hopefully we'll be able to start, if funding is available, construction and replacement of the new system in 19 beginning of 20. Media accurately on this, we are probably the last large community of our size that has not done this. King County is in the process, Pierce County, Thurston County, Clark County has done it, Spokane County has done it, so we're behind the curve in it. And one of the things that I didn't mention about being behind the curve is once King County switches over to the P25 digital system that we're looking at, we will no longer have the interoperable capability that we currently have with them. We will have to go through greater links to be interoperable with them. We'll still be able to do it, but it's going to take longer and be more difficult. And quite honestly, when you're responding to something, you don't have the time to pull around the button to change buttons around with the buttons to be interoperable with somebody else. The lack of the support for the system is going to require that we have a new system. We don't want to be in a situation where our system fails when someone, one of you, me, call, request aid because one of our family members is injured and we need to get there and you can't get to them. So that's one of the reasons we need it. One of the things I'm here tonight for is not to ask you for money, but it is to ask you, and the PowerPoint presentation that I sent you didn't have it because it was very long, but I have a kind of spreadsheet here that shows what the cost to the individual agencies would be if there wasn't a single source for funding.
If you scroll to the last slide, it's on the last slide.
Is that on that
one? One more. There you go.
Oh, it is. Okay.
Very good. I've been staring at it.
Okay. So there we go. We've got it. Anyways, that's what it would cost for Monroe Police. And they're broken up by police and fire. And fire is handled by District 7, so that's why I didn't bring their police here. Now, that's it. If you were to fund it and it wasn't funded by the county, which is the only single source for the entire county to fund something. You know, as they did in the past, it was funded in blocks by individual agencies. And what we would like to see is that we would like your support for sending a resolution to the county council that says that you would support having a new system and ask the county council to fund it through a funding source that they would deem appropriate.
Thank you. A bit of housekeeping first. Please let the record show that Councilmember Davis under chambers at 7:27. Time right now is 7:42. He came in during the surge presentation. Good evening, Councilmember Davis. Councilmembers, do you have any questions? Councilmember Cutback.
Did SnowCom and SnowPack Consolidate formally, is that done?
It is done.
Okay. When did that? They came in a while ago and talked about that. When did that officially go through?
January 1st.
Okay, so that just happened?
Yes.
Okay.
They consolidated with their board and with their management. They're currently still working out of the two locations. They will, over the course of the year, make the merger.
They talked about that. It needs a process. So you're separate from that?
We are.
Okay.
We did, in November of last year, we passed a resolution that for us to enter into conversations with Snohomish County 911 to look at either merging or being acquired by them for the purpose of governance.
Yes.
Because then we have a governance model that is more reflective of the county. And what I passed out the very beginning of the meeting was on January 4th, our council, not council, but our board, made a resolution that we would look at making the same type of governance if the merger didn't take place. So we kind of want to hedge it there.
Right. So you're talking about us sending something to the county advocating for the system to be replaced?
Yes.
And then to determine what funding source would be used. And then over here, though, it talks about share of property tax, using some of the property tax to fund it.
No, those are formulas that they looked at. As if you look at the 911 formula, that's the formula that they use for their funding measures. So annually, they use that formula to tell you what your cost will be. This is what the cost would be based on that percentage, which is your use of the system against the $75 million cost for a system.
Right, so our cost for Monroe, if I read this right, is $981,253.
Based on assessed value. Now, these are different formulas. No one has picked a formula that's going to be used yet.
Okay.
So you're looking at the good side. If you had the money,
I picked the lowest number.
The good side is if you funded yourself.
Yeah.
$900,000. If $900,000 to almost $2 million.
Yeah.
Yeah. And if it came through the county, then it would be some sort of tax measure. It would be levied on everybody's income.
So just to clarify then, what I understand you saying is that if there's a different kind of tax, if the county has the ability to do a different kind of tax measure where the city itself would need to debt service or pay these costs instead of just come from the collection of taxes or some other source, is that correct?
That's correct.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, okay. Understood.
Yeah.
Any other questions, Councilmember?
Thank you.
Thank you. I didn't see the push their button first. Oh, Councilmember Scarborough is tapped out. Councilmember Hanford.
Thank you. Thank you for presenting tonight. In the year 2000, when we did the last upgrade, how was that?
What happened was in 1997, there was a tax measure that went out to the county, which paid for the radio system. And then in 99, the South Cities, and Marysville and Everett joined together, and they developed a surge board, and they funded the first phase of the project, which was King County to somewhere above Marysville, not far above Marysville, and from the Sound to Highway 9. And then in 2000, I think it was 3, then the rest of the county came in through the sheriff's department and obtained through the sheriff's department for the funding. And I believe you have tax measures that are tax funds that you are paying on.
Correct. I think we have one more year left on the 800 megahertz. Is that?
I think it's done through.
What's it?
It's paid.
Oh, it's paid. Okay. So I know that when I was serving on council about over a decade ago, we did have to debt service payments for a number of years for the 800 megahertz. So we did it, you know, independently, if you will.
And the counties around us, well, the other counties that have done it have gone with a combination of King County went with the property tax, and Pierce County went with the 1/10 of 1% sales tax. There's an RCW that allows the county to assess a 1/10 of 1% sales tax for emergency communication. And that would then go on for.
All right, Councilmember Gamble.
So just looking at the fund, the three different five different options there. Three of them to me are pretty self-explanatory. The ratio of policy agency radios in all SEER systems, that's the number of devices, you know, based off of how many devices. There's breaking it out by the population of the city, and then there's the one that is based off of the property tax base. The other two, when it talks about the shared or the SERS formula for current assessments, and then there's the one PSAP formula for assessments.
Right. That's right now they have a formula that they use that is calls for service. I think there are four categories. I don't remember the one. One is calls for service. One is population. And I know that with Sunshine 901, one is assessed value. And with SERS, it is calls for service, the instead of assessed value, it's the area and then the population.
So the PSAP formula is what? The Snow County 911 PSAP formula for assessment?
That's the one that uses the assessment. It's part of the assessment.
Okay, the assessment.
They use calls for service, population, and assessment.
So it's a combination. So, got it.
They have a formula that they created.
Can we see that breakdown of the formula?
I do not have it. You could ask.
We can assess that.
Yeah. I'm just trying to understand. It's obviously a pretty close $1 million difference between, you know, the different.
Yeah.
Trying to understand the why.
With each agency, there's, and this holds true with every single agency. There are none of them that you look at it and they're all the same. You know, some agencies are going to have their population going through the roof. Some of them, the formulas for the 911 and for SERS is going to be just there on there because they have a huge amount of calls for service, like Everett or like Everett. They have huge amounts of calls for service. So they're much higher. They can see what on their screen.
Any other questions, Council? Do you have an example of a resolution that other jurisdictions are considering?
I will email you one.
Okay. If you can email that to our city administrator, that would be great.
Okay.
And council members, if it is of your interest, we can bring this back to a study session for discussion. I think it would be Councilmember Campbell.
Yeah, no, I'm extremely interested. I mean, I absolutely support. I think it's just trying to. You know, what's the right way that we want to say how to support that, right? Is it the county or is it, you know, a shared type of approach? Or, I mean, to me, it's just, it needs to be done. Just how do you figure it out? How do you do it?
Sounds good. So before that would be great. And we'll go ahead and schedule something for a study session. Do you have a timeline in mind?
For the resolution?
Correct.
It would be very good if it could be this month sometime, and I have more than one resolution that I can send you to look at. I have the fire district for fire district made a resolution, and so did the fire commissioner, that talked about the 1/10 of 1% sales tax. However, at the actual, therefore, when they got to that point of it, it was for the county to make the decision, which the county is really the one that needs to make the decision. You know, it's because they're the ones that are going out and looking at the taxpayers and saying, please support this.
And what are the county regulators then? You mentioned sales tax. What other options does the county have that they might consider?
Property tax in general, I don't know.
Council members, do you have any other questions or comments? Thank you very much for presenting.
Thank you.
All right, the next item we have on our agenda, and again, we backtracked back to AB 1803 under announcements and presentations. We've already done the consent agenda and comments from citizens. We've already taken care of new business. Councilmember Davis, you will have a certain sort of Councilmember Summer. Obviously. Nobody moved. Although we played with. We're going to go ahead and move on now to council member reports. City Council Finance and Human Resources Committee. Who's the chair of the committee?
That would be me.
Councilmember Gamble.
So we did meet tonight and elected the new chair, and then we reviewed the work plan for 2018. And we should be bringing that back next week, I think, to review the larger council and look at the year, see what you guys think.
Thank you. Any questions? All right, seeing none, let's go ahead and move on to the next item on the agenda, and Community Transit Board of Directors meeting. Councilman Kovac.
I did not intend last week, but my first week back at work, I was being off in 2 weeks, so.
Okay. All right, sounds good. And I'll go ahead and go down the line. Councilmember Gamble, do you have anything else?
Just a happy new year. Good to be back. That's about it. It's nice to have a white Christmas.
That's good. And before I forget, everybody could just double check those of you that were up for re-election last year, so make certain your badges work. We did have one councilmember, Hanford, whose badge didn't work. So we just want to make certain that everybody's badges are working. Councilmember Davis.
Howdy.
Thank you. Councilmember Davis.
It's good to be back. I want some vacation for a few weeks. And so, Christmas. So. Cool. And it was a great road trip. Good time with family. But I did need that to make a comment tonight that I'm more serious about it. It's something you need to think about. Because it's always been there with us. It's always been here with us. And in my case, yesterday my daughter called. Stopping, and it took us a while to find out what was wrong. And her childhood friend was in action yesterday on her way to be early to the hospital. And she went out there with her older sister and spent the day waiting to find out how she would be. She came out well, but she really began to do what she had to do. It would be a long in front of a beautiful little girl. And it's hard even talking about it. But the issues I think too, we've discussed it, we've talked about it, we've lobbied. But we have to keep that out there, we have to keep pushing. I've been commuting that highway for many years. It just seems that the longer the time goes, the more of us become personally involved in the tragedies that happen along the highway. And it's hard. You know, a lot of people have been personally involved, and it's been hard. But it's just something that we have to reconnect to and kind of work harder and see if we can get something done. I don't know exactly what the answer is to the problem, but it needs to be addressed and we need to have these I just ask that you keep giving your thoughts.
we'll keep working on Highway 2. And thank you, and again, yeah, we'll start here.
Thank you.
Councilmember Rasmussen.
Thank you for sharing and bringing that some backup to our attention. Really happy New Year, and looking forward to a great 2018.
Thank you. Councilmember Hanford.
Yeah, thanks for sharing. Councilmember Davis. Excited for this coming year, and we had a committee meeting this time and just got off to a good start, so I'm excited for what we're going to be able to accomplish as a city. Thank you. Councilmember Cutback.
Thank you for sharing. I appreciate you being vulnerable and sharing that. I'm also excited for 2018. It's going to be a great year. I look forward to serving with all of you.
Thank you. Councilmember Sterling.
Ditto with everybody's comments. And if you're not going to fail, you know, all your support, you should go ahead. It brings life to a rural reality. It's not the other guy at this point. I hope San Diego is good for you.
It's great.
And I look forward to the next 4 years to continue to learn. Thank you.
Thank you. We have updates from two departments. First, finance update. Ms. Asher.
So what was in your packet was actually November's financial report. So I know it's a little bit dated at this point. But we didn't have a meeting towards the end of December, and with the cancellations towards the end of December, this was the first chance we had to put it out in the public record. So unless there's specific questions on the report itself, I think I'm going to leave it at that. However, I did want to highlight the last two paragraphs on the report that had to do with our 2018 property tax assessments. I thought it was interesting in taking a look. The county has sent us our certified valuation, and our values did increase over 13% from the prior year valuation, and a lot of that had to do with a lot of the new construction that was added to the rolls. There was over $97 million in new construction that has been added to our assessed value. Because the city or the council chose not to increase property taxes at the mayor's recommendation, our actual assessed value or our rate per thousand that we charge against assessed value is actually decreasing by 11 cents from the prior year. So a little bit of good news to go with as we continue to grow as far as for tax burden for our citizens. And then just to kind of give you a reminder, I'm sure you've gone through this drill in prior years, the December report does come out much later than the other months because we are now in the process of starting to close out 2017. So until we close period 13, we won't have numbers to share for December.
Thank you. Any questions for Ms. Hesser? All right. Same then, we'll go ahead and move on to the police department update. Chief Lindsay.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor, Council. I'll stay back here. I want to share some information, but I don't want to share my cold. So, our community outreach team has currently contacted 84 people. Four of those people are new. We had six clients that we've been working on for several months now who have now accepted and reached out to receive chemical dependency assessments. Which is great news. We had six people complete chemical dependency assessments. We referred two people to intensive outpatient treatment, and we graduated one inpatient treatment from clean and house, sober housing. We've got one entered into detox, and we've referred one to a housing program. This program has been extremely successful so far. And we're very proud of the work that the officer and social worker are doing on this one. Some events that I'd like to talk about in December were the officers went over to the Cornerstone Academy for a visit. That went over very well. We had a great time over there.
Also on December 5th, the officers went over to take the next step to serve dinner. We had six or seven people over there, and that was a very successful venture as well. On December 8th, Mops and Cops, Mops is mothers of preschoolers. And the officers, they had a gift drive and took a large amount of gifts down to Children's down in Seattle and gave them to the hospital to distribute. Very, very good. On December 13th, we had Shop with a Cop. We've been very fortunate. Last year, we got a donation of $10,000 from one of our citizens. This year, we got an additional $5,000. We were able to take 25 children out of that event. It was just a pleasure to be there. And on December 15th, we did the polar plunge. Our very own Sergeant Johnston jumped in the ice cold water for us so that the chief and I didn't have to do that. So, just personnel recap, we have Hannah Snavely is starting to graduate the academy on January 18th. Our recruit, Bradley Pettit, is starting to graduate the academy on February 13th. Recruit Natalie Steinbeck still is waiting for an appointment to the academy. And on January 4th, Alex Thomas accepted a job, and he will start on January 16th. The last thing on the agenda tonight was the statistics from 2016 to 2017. And when we look at burglaries, in 2016 we had 63. In 2017, we reduced that to 31. For vehicle prowls, in 2016, we had 148, and in 2017, 47. For vehicle thefts, we're hanging a little bit higher than we did in 2016, 51, and in 2017, we had 55. The vehicle prowls and burglaries, I think we can attribute a little bit of that success in reducing those crime rates by a significant degree to the outreach program that we're doing and contacting these individuals who are homeless and have mental or drug addiction issues on a daily basis. So I think it really made a difference in reducing the crime rate. Are there any questions?
Councilor's questions. Councilor Hanford.
Yes, thank you. No questions, Deputy Chief, but love seeing those numbers on the statistics. That just speaks very highly of our department. Thank you.
All right, let's go through the rest of the staff that's here tonight. Mr. Farrell?
Well, thank you, Mayor. Good evening, Council. Just want you to note in your calendars, set aside some time if you can Thursday. This Thursday, 4 p.m., Sky River Park, we're going to be celebrating dedication of the new exercise equipment that we got from a grant, Snohomish County Small Capital Projects Partnership with the Monroe Boys and Girls Club as well. I don't have any control of the weather, so you're on your own. Be prepared and bring waders if you have them, because we may have some localized flooding too. So, that's all.
Thank you. And before we continue on with individual directors, I did see Mr. Feldberg's hand go up back there. I missed you behind Mr. Swanson. Public Works update. And then I'll come back to Mr.
Swanson. Just wait for back there. So I'm here.
I wasn't sitting in the front row this week. So. As usual, the monthly report is in your packet. And a couple things to point out this time is we added a new section to the different projects, a little budget or spending recap of how much the estimate of the project was, how much we've spent today, how much we're anticipating to spend in the future for design, right-of-way acquisition, and construction. And then another one is, the other thing is that in case you haven't noticed, the long-awaited sidewalks across the railroads have started construction. They're actually out there doing work. So hopefully we get a stop rate so we can actually do some more, and so hopefully that will get wrapped up at the end of February. We'll be able to walk across the railroad tracks without having to high stack.
Or walk on the roadway.
Walk on the roadway, yes. So if there's any questions, I'd be happy to answer them.
Thank you. Does anybody have any questions from Mr. Albert? Thank you.
I just was curious about the disabled sidewalk access down by the Bank of America building. Is that Bank of America or the city?
Bank of America did that.
They did that?
Yes.
Were they working in conjunction with the city? Or?
Yes, they got permits and things like that.
Oh.
Yeah.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, you're welcome.
Any other questions? Thank you very much, Mr. Crowder. Customer Gamble, you had a question earlier. Was that from Mr. Crowder?
Well, I was just thinking, he needs to learn how to advertise better his events.
Okay. Is that on your calendar?
What's that? No, the lead up there of rain and no. Flooding.
Oh, I see. I should say it's going to be sunny. Very interesting. Okay, Mr. Felber, do you have anything further? No. Okay, I guess responsive.
Just one quick update. Last week it was released in the Mayor's newsletter on the Facebook site and a press release that the Valley Transit, Snohomish Valley Transit bus is running, and it's basically an on-demand service. Costs $1, but you have to call 2 hours ahead of time, and it basically runs from Monroe down to Carnation. And so it's providing that connection. It was a 2 to 4 day lead time is what they want to call for. But that again is funded by King County. So the way it was from the Valley Transit pitched it to King County was, we're going to bring King County residents up to Monroe for dialysis and big box stores. But she also is saying, well, we'll take Monroe residents, you know, down to Duval, Carnation, and around the city also. And so it is a service. Again, I think I said this before. Next year they're hoping to add an additional bus to increase that service. And we are working with this transit group I'm on right now is working with approximately $100,000 in grant money for a one-time project. So I'm pitching to put a fixed route essentially between Monroe Carnation going through, or from Carnation to Monroe and actually going through Monroe on a fixed route system. So we'll see how that ends up.
Any questions? All right. Let's come on up here then. You'll see Monroe this week there in your packets. You have one thing to read into the record for everybody. Chief, your officers have been busy. I don't think you've seen this yet, so maybe we should read something into the record. All right, so this was sent to me. It was dated December 31st of 2017. It came from Peter and Rita Jeffords from Oak Harbor, Washington. Office of Mayor, Monroe, Washington, dear sir, about noon on the 12th of October, my wife and I were driving east on Highway 2 when our left rear tire went flat. We managed to get to the side of the road just before the 179th Street light, but we're very close to moving traffic. It was raining lightly, and when I called AAA, they said that they would help me within 2 hours. Moments later, the Monroe police officer arrived and asked what our problem was. When we told the AAA being notified, he agreed that it might take 2 hours, and then said, "Let me see your spare," and proceeded to change the wheel. Moments later, another squad car arrived to provide cover. The charitable assistance to a 90-year-old driver was way over what I could have anticipated. We failed to get their names, but want to give them our sincere thanks. Peter and Lena Jeffers of Carver, Washington. So we were able to look into the record. Please thank on behalf of me, the council, and the Jeffers, officers Walker and Eriks, for stopping and going above the call of duty that day. Thank you. We'll go ahead and provide this to you so that we can share this with your staff. Thank you. Okay, and I don't have anything else to report today. Let's go ahead. Let's see.
Sure. So on the extended agenda for the next regular and only regular meeting that we have in January, so it'll be a busy one as we try and get as much material as possible on the upcoming agenda. We do have about the police guild contract that we put in front of you at this meeting, so that's good news. We're able to get that contract negotiated before the end of the year, and we'll have everything in place, hopefully with council approval prior to the first payroll. And we also then have all bring to your attention a property appraisal contract for North Kelsey. So looking to get those properties appraised and we know what they're worth and moving forward to broker them. On the 23rd, which is the study session, we have county council executive Dave Summers coming to speak to us on that agenda, and then also elected officials training emergency management and open government. So it's our annual responsibility to make sure that you all meet those state departments, and that'll be the meeting that we can fill that.
That's Liz's favorite night.
It's all about
Liz. Woo-hoo! And Brad. It's the Liz and Brad show.
So just a reminder then to those that have signed up for the AWC Legislative Action Conference down in Olympia. That's on the 24th and 25th. Pam and I will be putting together a pack of materials for you so you'll know where you need to be and what you need to be doing and what the agenda is for those 2 days. On the 6th, we had the request to bring back the resolution, and I don't think we're going to be able to make our regular meeting on the 16th, because we would have to have that ready to go actually tomorrow. So I would suggest that you put that on your agenda for the 6th of February, if that works for you. Perfect. Anyone have that? That's all I have.
Any questions for tonight? Councilmember Rasmussen?
I see on the consent agenda that we have a meeting on Tuesday, the 30th. Tuesday of Tuesday, so I will be
right, and I'm sorry that we're not going to be able to partake of Shirley. What time does your event begin?
5:00.
Maybe you can bring us the leftovers.
If there are
any. Okay, anything further? All right, we do have, first tonight, we do have a couple study sessions, so we will be moving down to the table of four. But before we do that, we do have a need for two executive sessions. The first one is pricing of property, RCW 43.130.110, subsection 1, subsection C. And 2 is property acquisition, RCW 42.130.110, subsection 1, subsection B. We'll go ahead and start off with the executive sessions combined at 10 minutes. And then there is the possibility of action after the executive session, if nothing else to adjourn following the discussion. So we are in executive session for approximately 10 minutes. Okay, we are now moving on to our study session part of the agenda, having come out of executive session. The item we are working on first under discussion is discussion item number 1. This is AB 18-009, Monroe Municipal Code Amendments, Chapter 6.04, Nuisances, Title 10, Traffic. Mr. Barber.
Thank you. When you were going through some of the code changes that you were planning on doing that Ben didn't have it up, I was at one of the screen them all at the same time, and then the attorney bill got really long, so we split it in two. These are basically based on citizen requests, Facebook posts, just us looking through the code and going, that doesn't make any sense, those kind of things. So the first one we're going to talk about today is the, started out as complaints regarding construction noise. Frequently we get complaints when there are building subdivisions by people, the contractors starting early in the morning or working late at night. So we took a look at the jurisdictions around us, and this table, which is also in your packet if you want to look at it closer, shows what most of the some cities around us. We have Arlington, Bothell, Duval, Goldmore, Lake Stevens, Monroe, Snohomish, Snohomish County, Woodinville, and Mill Creek. Most of them are some variation of the state law, which is basically 7 to 10 p.m. for your hours. Some of them have contract those a bit, like 7 a.m. to 9 p.m. Some of them have made it so that you only can't work on Sundays at all, no construction noise whatsoever on Sundays. So taking all this and looking at kind of how things work around here, we had some suggested language, which is included in your packet, which is basically having no construction noise, and that also included, because another complaint we have is they don't start construction until 7, but they turn their trucks on and warm them up at 5:30. So they're not constructing, there's any trucks, so we actually have that you can't idle the trucks either. From 8 to 7, so 8 p.m. to 7 a.m., you can't do that during the week, and then from 8 p.m. to 9 a.m. on the weekends. So
you get to sleep in a little bit on Saturdays and Sundays before they can start doing their instruction activities. We've also added the language of not necessarily construction noise, but home improvement noises, which is the next one created by power and operation equipment. Temporary periodic maintenance, expand those and made that separate so that you can do that always from 7 a.m. to 9 p.m. That way you can get home from work, you still have a few hours to do some work around the house. We have it also included in here is not in this language, but if you decide to go forward with this, we will add some language regarding exemptions. So when people are doing work, we've had it in ourselves, we're doing something that affects the state highway, they won't allow you to work during the day, so you have to work at night. So there'll be a process to grant waivers for working at night in those kinds of circumstances. Also, we talked about when we did Chain Lake Road sewer, we had the contractor do it at night, so we wouldn't have Chain Lake Road closed during rush hour going from home or going to work, so we let them work at night. So if there's any questions on that first part, I can answer them now.
Sounds good. So I didn't catch you came first with Hanford again. Councilmember Hanford.
Thank you. So can you just give me a brief update on the current noise regulations, not just construction, but any
other? Current noise regulations are, we just adopted the WAC 17360 by reference that says, and the WAC has it divided into basically commercial, industrial, and residential properties. Okay. So the sound generating property and then the sound receiving property. And there's decibel levels that you can have. And then after 10 p.m. and before 7 a.m., it drops by 10 decibels. So you can still make noise, you just have to be a little quieter at night. And we also don't have any decibel meters in our possession. So it's really hard to enforce that. And then also, in order to do that, and you can try to enforce it, the first thing they'd say is, when was the last time you had your noise meter calibrated and how much training that the person who used it had. So get away from that. We're kind of just, these are the kind of noises, construction equipment can't have noises between right now it's 9 p.m. and, or 8 p.m., sorry, and 7 a.m. So that's easy for people. The police would probably be out doing that at that time and say, yep, that's it. An excavator you have running, you can't do that at this time.
Okay, so practically speaking, in the neighborhood, say the Prylons, the neighbor's having a party, or they're having a bonfire, or they're doing something in the backyard where it's getting late,
mm-hmm.
10 o'clock, it's supposed to come later.
Right.
What about pressure washing, this is mainly in the summer, obviously, but pressure washing the driveway?
Right, that's
using the
same thing. 7 a.m. to 10 a.m., you can have more noise, and after 10 p.m., it has to be a little quieter.
Okay.
So our proposal would be you couldn't do pressure washing after 9 p.m.
9?
Yes.
Okay, that's what I was trying to understand. Is, and so, tanking the house, running the air compressor,
you can 9 p.m. You can do less than 9 p.m.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right. So working your drive with a power saw after 9 p.m.?
Probably. Yeah. Sure, green.
Yeah.
I'll just think my air compressor going off at 10 o'clock at night. How will this be enforced?
Complaint-based. So basically, someone will call 911 and the police will go out there because they're the only people that are around it.
Okay, so
at night.
So we have to purchase decibel?
No, because it just says you can't do it now. The proposal is you can't do it. No construction noise after 8 p.m.
Oh, okay.
So now, in order to really enforce, there are some sections of the code, other sections that don't specifically, just basically if the police officer thinks it's disturbing the peace, they can say something, but the specific noise regulations we have adopted are quantitatively based, which means so many decibels. That's what we currently have.
Okay. What about in the event, or in the case of a large construction site, so if you've got 20 homes going up and they're working a little bit later, but we're out in the middle of nowhere and there's all these empty houses? I mean, is it just,
yeah, they can,
if
yeah.
It's just complaint-based, then
it's just complaint-based, so you don't have a problem. Yeah.
All right, that answers it. Thank you.
Thank you.
Councilor
Pettibat.
So how do I read this right here? So it's like for Monroe, construction activities 7 a.m. to 10 p.m. and then maintenance repairs 7 a.m. to 7 p.m. And then what's 10 p.m. to 7 a.m.?
That was just showing you that at night, the
decibels switch from 15
okay,
decibels
that's
to 25
what the 45
decibels.
To the 50 is?
Yeah, so basically it's F. 7 to 10 is, you can be a little louder than you can from 10 to 7.
And this is what we currently have.
That's what we currently have.
And we don't have anything, because it looks like some cities have something for the weekend.
Correct.
We don't have anything.
There's
that's
no,
just
no
saying for us
right.
right now. But in what
yeah.
we're maybe proposing is having a change.
There'll be an hour difference on the,
okay.
the weekend.
So when you say construction activity, are you talking about a residential construction activity, or are you talking about a business construction?
That's the differentiation we have between construction activity and maintenance and repair. So construction activity would be a backhoe, bulldozers, earth movers, that kind of stuff.
What if it's somebody building a shed in their backyard?
Yeah, they're building a shed. Power tools, those things, that would be maintenance and repair, which you get the extra hour. And then,
okay, so
yeah.
that would be considered
yeah.
maintenance
repair.
Repair.
If you're building the shed in the backyard, that's maintenance repair as opposed to building whole houses.
It's construction,
yeah.
but it's
yeah.
maintenance and repair.
It's basically based on the kind of tools you're using, hand power tools,
okay.
power saws, things like that.
That
does
that
in there, yeah. Versus the excavators, large trucks, things like that.
Okay. And my other question was moving it to 7 a.m. to 8 p.m. Monday through Friday. That's what's proposed here, right?
Yes.
It's where
when
you can allow it. And then.
Right.
So
basically, it's on the construction starts at the same time in the morning, but it stops 2 hours earlier in the evening. And also,
yeah,
we've also made it so that the construction always includes warming up the trucks. So you can't, so they can't say, well, we're not doing the construction activity, we're warming up the trucks, and we're starting at 6, so that'll keep noise down to 7. And that's when we usually have the complaints in the morning, is that they started their trucks too early.
Right. Isn't there a difference in construction season, though, that they start maybe at 6 a.m.? Like, it's my understanding that construction companies get out there earlier in the summer
mm-hmm.
and in the spring. So that doesn't, that's cutting into their work time.
Right. Because this is based on the neighbors not getting woken up early in the morning.
Right, but
yeah.
then if we change it, it's infringing maybe on a business being able to start at 6 a.m. because that's when they typically start to get the work done in the summer.
Correct.
So that's all. I did.
Yeah.
I didn't know if we had common time from businesses and others look at this. We've had complaints, obviously,
yeah.
who said, boy, it's noisy, I'd like to change it, and not disagreeing with that. Because I live up in a farm, and people are doing things at all times of the day and night with,
Yeah.
sawing down basically your tree in their backyard at 10 o'clock at night or something. I get it. But before I would recommend a change, I would like to know maybe from construction firms or people that are actually, this is their livelihood. It's not somebody doing, going out and building a shed in their own backyard or cutting down trees. If this affects a construction company starting their work day, which infringes on project timelines and whatnot. I don't know how I would feel about that if I was them. Does that make sense? Because this applies whether it's a commercial building, residential building, everything. And I could see some commercial buildings and businesses, they start earlier than 7 a.m. So how is that going to impact their business? But that's a question I would want to ask before I would say, yeah, let's change it.
Okay.
Councilmember Gamble?
Thank you.
Councilmember Gamble?
Yeah, no, the piece, when I was reading through it earlier, the one thing I did notice on that on the construction side was, I put in there for local or state or federal agencies. But the piece I didn't see is for potential on the utility side, like a pole or something that goes down.
Mm-hmm.
Usually it's at night.
Right.
And you need a backhoe.
Mm-hmm.
We would need to put in the verbiage associated to that.
Right.
And it was communications or electrical and or related.
Mm-hmm.
And those would also fall under the, it's spelled out from the parking side of the equation,
right.
I think. We say that it's the utility to actually call that out, but we don't in the construction hour piece, because that would be pretty bad if we had a power pull down and couldn't talk about it until the... And I do, the piece that does, I hear what you're saying, Patsy. I mean, really, because I was looking at it exactly through those eyes when I first, looked at it, especially being somewhat in the tractor on that side. And we're really not changing the hours for them to start their construction. I mean, if you think about it, from the proposal, because it was 7 to 4. We're just basically changing it from, we don't need a meter to go out there and measure it. That's really the change, is specifically outlining, hey, you can't do this, 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 and this. But as far as getting into the actual, hey, you're detrimental to my ability to construct, we're not really changing anything from that, so the way that I look at the verbiage change. And then the only thing I just want to make clear, and I think you brought it up, was, I mean, I don't see anything in here, because we don't want the police department to get into the, on the barbecue or the party. I mean, that will take care of it. That's not in here. I didn't see that in here, the noise associated to it. So, but it's not in here, but does it eliminate the other law associated with it?
No.
So that would still,
be there.
Okay.
Yeah.
Because I'm fine with that. I mean, there are meters. They're not that expensive. We can, do them. We just probably have everybody, certified to actually conduct the test. But that would stay on the record, so we'd have that as a guiding principle, even though we can't enforce it on the books. Okay. I'm good.
Go ahead, Mr. Crawford.
On that point, is there was a list of some other cities say, loud noise, whistling, including music and all that kind of stuff, and we talked to the police department about that, and they said,
No, I don't know.
So we didn't bring that forward to you, because they already said they didn't want to do that, and they said that what we have in mind is fine. So, and besides that, they're usually building units on the hill, so they don't know making that noise. So
right. Well, no, that's my point. I mean, it's like, you got that kind of problem.
We don't
need a phone call every time.
Any further questions on that?
No, I didn't get it.
Thank
you. Repeat the current laws for non-construction, because this is just construction.
The current laws for every, it just says noise.
It's just noise.
Just noise.
Okay.
At least it's sound, I believe.
And then you said it starts at 6 o'clock.
No, 7. 7 to 10.
It's always 7.
Yeah, 7 to 10, and then it's really 5 to 10 decibels less from 10 to 7.
And so that's inclusive of, because when you mentioned starting up the truck at 6 o'clock in the morning.
Yeah.
Starting up, again, the generators, the alternator, the compressors, the whatever, the motorcycle that you're going to take into work. I've heard complaints about that.
Right.
Those would fall under that general sound issue, but not,
right, not under this.
The purely construction.
Right. Yeah.
Okay. Something you may want to address as well.
Yeah. But not tonight. Councilor Campbell.
Yeah, I was just going to say that one of the complaints that came in from a citizen, they actually have the equipment to measure the noise because of the profession they're in. So there is, they're basically, they're saying, was stating to me, hey, look, no, they're violating with their brakes and all that kind of stuff. So I think it's cover might not be the right, I think it's a good way to go from the standpoint of just saying, okay, we know that these construction activities, they already are going to go over that
right.
decibel, and just by doing that, they don't have to carry a meter on. It just makes sense.
And it would appear, based on statutes, if I'm looking at this correctly, most jurisdictions will categorize things not just by decibels, but also by the activity.
Correct.
So you're showing here is you're showing something we don't currently have in the road, you're showing the activity.
There are some that are just qualitative, and there's some are quantitative. So the majority of them have added the language to be qualitative, so they don't have to have a decibel meter that says it's 47 decibels.
It makes it easy. Officer shows up on site to a complaint. Somebody's doing construction next door to me. It's before 7 o'clock. Officer looks. Yep, that's construction activity. You need to stop. The decibel meter required. You don't need to sit there and measure the decibels for 5 or 10 minutes to see if you have so many somebody over the limits over the course of that period of time, and the officer instead can take care of other issues that might be going on in town. It seems pretty straightforward.
What's the exemption?
Snohomish County allows the community development director to issue exemptions if you have a permitted construction activity. So that's basically, I got that. And so, like, the Arlington, the building official does it. The Golden Bar, the public works director, does it. Snohomish County is community development director. Yeah. And we have it.
Yeah. That was in there.
Yeah. Yeah.
Do I hear objection from council about the direction that staff is going on this? Okay. Staff, as you're doing this, is going to go through planning commission or already?
No. This one is not a development regulation. It's a nuisance, so it does not go to planning commission.
Correct.
It has been SEPA and commerce.
Okay. So if this has been noticed as SEPA, notice of commerce. Councilmember Cutback expressed an interest in making certain that businesses are notified.
Yeah, I'm saying because I totally missed that it was 7 and 7 because it just seems like in this community that I've seen construction and stuff starting at 6, but they obviously weren't maybe going along with what the policy already was. And right. It just seems like it's seasonal, but it makes more sense to have different times. But we clearly haven't done that.
Yeah, the only one that has a seasonal is Lindenville, and they let it go a little later at night.
At night in the summer.
Yeah.
So they don't do it in earlier, they just do it later.
Yes.
For the summertime.
So is there any additional outreach then requested of the council for consensus, or are we good with what we have here? Okay, I'm saying thumbs up, good with what we've got here. All right. So we'll go ahead and finalize this part then, and then we'll come back before council for first reading. Is that correct?
Yes.
Sounds good. Go ahead and move on to the next one.
The next one is...
Oh, I'm sorry.
I was just going to say, and to your point earlier, I mean, actually, what we're doing here is we're just making it easier to enforce. With the adjustment,
we'll see if
by announcement, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah. We're just making it easier to enforce kind of what's already in place.
Sure. Yes, about the asphalt, yes.
Yeah.
Okay.
Good. The next one is Table 10. This started out as customer concerns regarding, you mentioned the brakes. This is the J brakes, or compression brakes, as they're generically called. And so we were looking to put where to put that. Most of the cities have that in their traffic ordinance. So we added that. But looking through Title 10, we found a whole bunch of other things that probably need fixing, so we have a little scope here going on here. So the first one was reading the municipal code. There's a bunch of references to RCWs that we've adopted by reference. And some of those RCWs no longer exist. So one of the things we're proposing to do is fix the RCWs, so when you're referring to the RCW that talks about certain things, that you're actually referring to the right RCW. The other things that we looked at is, going through that, is in when the chain link road area, basically north of the roundabout annex in the city, it was in the Snohomish County, so it had the 35-mile-an-hour speed limit. By state law, all streets inside city limits are 25 miles an hour unless the city council decides to make it something different. At that time, the council decided to leave it at 35. We came back, I think that was in 99. We came back in 2001, asked again if the council was interested in reviewing that. The council at that time said no. Now that we've been a few years and there's more development up there, there's a lot more traffic coming into the street, is it something the city council would like to consider thinking about dropping that down to 25 miles an hour, like most of the rest of the city streets? One of the things, and there's also happening since asking that or that.
So we've got two different issues here.
Yeah.
One is compression brakes. The other one is...
Well, we haven't got the compression brakes yet.
Okay.
Yeah.
Why don't we start with compression brakes?
Okay.
And then let's move to the speed limit, because I think that we'll get a lot more discussion on the speed limit.
Okay.
And less on the compression brakes. I'd like to knock that off the list. It's in the same agenda, correct?
Yes, it's, I think it's item... at the very bottom.
Okay. So we'll go to compression brakes and then we'll come back to the speed limit.
Okay, so basically, the compression brakes is basically outlaws the use of compression brakes for vehicles greater than 15,000 pounds, except in.
Point of words. Yeah. I'm sorry. I noticed that some people have a document. My understanding is it's on the computer, obviously. Have it. So in the future, could we have documents? I didn't have one on my desk. A document. So if, for future study considerations, if we could have a paper copy, when you're available, or if it's helpful.
I agree, thank you.
Scroll the other way. Other way.
Because I'm at the end of the document, so. Keep
it
a little
further.
There you go. Down just a hair.
Oh.
There you go. Oh. Okay, so that's the proposed language for disallowing use of compression brakes on vehicles greater than 15,000 pounds. And it's been reviewed by the police department. They're happy with that. They had a suggestion to add the 15,000 pounds because the police chief. Pickup truck has compression brakes and we need one to still be able to use them. but they don't make noise like large trucks doing it, so he just didn't want to violate the law because he said pickup trucks, diesel pickup trucks, not use engine compression to slow themselves down, but they don't make that large crack noise.
Does anybody have any concerns about that? Go ahead, customer server. You're talking about within city limits.
Yes,
this is only within city limits. Does it include highway 2?
Inside city limits it does, but not outside city limits.
So they can only use them up to the end of the before Old Norman Road and after the fairgrounds basically?
Correct, yes.
Any concerns?
Will you yield for a question on
that? Sure.
I don't know if it's a safety measure, and especially as busy as Highway 2 is, does it make more sense to allow it to be used on Highway 2, especially since we're just looking at commercial properties essential? Yeah. Is there a way that we could allow it on Highway 2 as part of the
traffic? Yeah, you have to say, except on Highway 2.
Or
not allow the residential streets or something
just,
like that.
Rather than make it confusing, especially for the enforcement side of it. I just think it'd be a good idea.
Thank you.
And with that, since we're on that, we'll come back to you, Councilor Starbro. If we're going to be making an exception for Highway 2, how about 522 and also?
Is there residential 3, 203?
Is that a.
Well, if I could, that's on my things up. That's what I was going to talk about, because I've heard complaints from residents
on Fryland.
The Frylands area from trucks slowing down to get off. And come on the Highway 2 or in the Fred Land.
On the Highway 2?
Yeah.
Off of Fred
Land. On 522.
On 522 on the Highway?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Or to come down the hill of Fred Land. I've also heard it coming down to take the exit to the high school. Or the roundabout. Mm-hmm. So, in my opinion, I mean, Highway 2, if you're going 35 miles an hour, which is the speed limit, you shouldn't need compression brakes, I wouldn't think, on a large truck like that. We're flying straight through Monroe on Highway 2. 522 is where I've heard complaints, so I don't understand why I would say, except Highway 2, I would just say what you got, but make sure that we know where the boundary is on both highways so that it's properly posted so that trucks know when they can't do it. Okay. Would it stop? I don't know where the limit is. Would it stop them from going down that exit?
Basically, it's the north driveway to the high school is where the line crosses.
So that would that would alleviate all the concerns that I heard on 522.
Okay. So Councilor Scarborough still has the floor. Is it about Highway 2 and 522?
Well, I agree with what Councilor Hanford said. I would say you might put a caveat in there except for an emergency.
Okay.
Yes.
Because anybody's driven a truck that's got a compression brake, it makes a heck of a difference. or a motor home. Although the motor homes don't make that noise, the braking system on the DC pusher or the brake on is a whole lot different than the one that's off. But it's not intrusive to make a motor home, but in a truck, I could already say an emergency. If I were driving a truck, I wouldn't care what the law was at that point. I use your name and have the fight later.
Do you have anything for the councilor?
No, thank you.
All right, Councilmember Hanford.
That's it.
Okay. So is there objection to keeping this the way this is written?
No.
Okay. What else do you have here besides the speed limit on Chin Lake? Is that it?
No.
That's it.
Okay. Let's go back to speed limit.
Speed limit Chin Lake Road. That's B.
Which one is it?
B. No. Yeah, right there. That's great. Mm-hmm. There you go. Okay, so the speed limit on Chin Lake Road, it's been reviewed before. Council decided not to do anything with it, just because there's more traffic on it, more subdivisions alongside the road. Is there any interest in investigating changing that to 25 miles an hour, like most streets in town, or just leave it as 35 as it is now?
Councilor Hanford, you're up first.
Thank you. If I lived up there, I would want it to stay 35 because I want to get through that area and on to my destination. However, having driven that road several times and had a hard time pulling out on a side street onto Chin Lake Road, where it's 35 and cars are zipping by, with the multiple hills where you have limited sight visibility and corners, especially at where the all development is occurring right before Brown Road there, I would definitely recommend that we go to 25. Thanks.
Okay. Thank you. Councilmember Starbuck.
I would disagree. I would agree with 35. Except, I understand the concern at Brown Road and having had to have buses there. But I don't know about the other Sinclair Heights farm, new construction just above the farm. I'll tell you how ridiculous it seems to me to be coming in Woods Creek and had a 25 mile an hour sign all the way out of Hewitt's farm over there about when there's nothing along the road. I would concede that it might be different up here, but I think if we're going to look at that and changing it to 25, we ought to look at some of the other 25s and put them back out to 35, or put the 25 sign closer into the town and not as far out the little Old Woman Road, Woods Creek, Chain Light, the one that goes up the fairgrounds, which is Hospital Road to me. That's my input.
Thank you. Councilor Cadillac.
When you said investigate, what did you mean, Brad?
Did I hear that right? It depends on whether there actually are warrants or methods to determine what the speed limit should be,
right,
or does the council just want to make it a policy that it's a speed limit? Initial investigation of doing it the official way is that it should be 40 miles an hour.
Based on what?
Based on the 85th percentile speed, the accidents, and the geometry of the road.
So that would say it should be at 40?
It should be at 40.
Okay.
There is the computer program the Federal Highway Administration has doesn't have the nuances of, how does it feel when you're at the intersection looking, get on the road and things like that. It's not that sophisticated. So there's that other judgment that's needed in there, but the first blush is 40 miles an hour.
Okay.
Much like when we asked the WashDOT to look at the speed limit south of Tampa 203,
right,
and they came in, we brought it outside city limits, but it should be raised to 35 inside city limits. And
then
we said no thanks. Yeah, so there's that other stuff than just the straight data that comes out of there.
So something Councilmember Scarborough was saying, Woods Creek is 25 when you get to the know, it's almost to the light.
It's the highway to bypass right away, because that's where Sandy lives.
And then after that, though, it's 35.
Yes.
So.
Yeah.
So we're not looking at that here, we're looking at keeping that 35.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah, that, because no, nothing has really happened since the last time.
Well, the sidewalks wouldn't.
Yeah, so which made it safer, which made it, yeah, so.
So the chain link, I mean, I do live up there, and I understand the uniformity of having, like, on residential streets within the city limits or 25, just making it easy that people then just know that. You know, it's subjectively, because that's all I have, I don't have any data to look at, I don't have anything, I don't have a formula to do it. I actually would say that it's better at 25, because there's a lot of activity, there's a lot of kids crossing from that new development where there's not a crosswalk, it's a little bit further down, and there's the curb, people kind of fly up that hill. And then having a sidewalk when we finally get it up to Browns Road, there's a lot more kids walking and a lot more people crossing the streets at different points. There's a crosswalk up Farm to Southern Clare Heights, but further down there's not a crosswalk across. And I see many people crossing that. So, you know, it's hard for me to say because I don't have any data that, you know, that's what I'm saying. How do you investigate this to really determine what should be the speed limit? There's only my subjective kind of opinion, which is, you know, it's getting more activity, more dangerous. People are crossing more across that road. People tend to go higher when it's posted at 35. It's my experience they are going a little bit more than 35. And some of them don't slow down to 25 right when it's supposed to slow down to 25 around the roundabout. So it for ease of people knowing what it is, 25 throughout residential makes sense. But in parts of where we're in the city limits and still a little rural, that's where, to me, saying 25 within city limits just cross board doesn't make sense. Mm-hmm. Like Woods Creek, mm-hmm. if you were saying it's not as developed, there's not as much activity. But so I would be open to looking at 25. I'd be curious, have we had a lot of resident complaints?
Just a couple. Yeah.
So for that one, I would maybe want a little bit more input from residents. Maybe put it out there what they think, a little bit more input on that. My subjective opinion based on me driving it every single day and walking it almost every single day is, you know, it's getting to the point where slowing people down might be a good safety measure.
Okay. Thank you. Councilor Campbell.
The complaints we received was on, it was probably on speed, not that we need to reduce the speed limit.
No, it's actually specifically, where are you going to make the speed limit on Chamberlain Road 25 miles an hour?
Oh, it was specific?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
How about that? Huh?
Yeah.
No, I would agree that but what I heard, though, you say is that actually the science says that it's 40 miles an hour. So
the first blush of science?
Yes.
Because it can't.
I'm a data guy. Right. I don't like to just make, let's just do it because it makes the lines look all nice and, you know, and all that kind of stuff. If you've got data and traffic flow and that type of stuff, the same 40, most people are already going 40 anyway, even though the speed limit is 35. I don't understand why we would go against that. That's just, I mean, I get all of the other, you know, concerns. Mm-hmm. I mean, we've got a sidewalk, a really nice sidewalk that's off to the side. We've got a sidewalk in downtown where there's even more people walking than the speed limit is 45 because you're going, you know, you're going out of town. So I know we've heard complaints, you know, about that. Keep it down there. And the other question I have is that I did see in there also the raising of the speed limit. Is that, because we had it at 20 and then we put the sidewalk in, I'm trying to remember.
Right, that's the first
side,
yes.
Yeah. But, you know, if we did the first blush of scientific on that, we'd probably say that it doesn't need to be at 20 miles.
Right.
So I would be in favor. I mean, that's the way that I like to make those type of decisions, is that we got the data behind us that says, just like we did with the, you know, we were looking at the blueberry and calcium and all that kind of stuff, you know, really kind of, you know, looking at the documentation. Just to me, sometimes it feels like if we just make the decision because, you know, hey, well, yeah, it would be nice if it was 25, I think it would be 25, it seems safer, it makes it sound like we all stayed at a Holiday Inn last night, as opposed to actually having traffic logic. Thank you, I got a token laugh.
I don't know what that means.
Okay, so I've got a plurality of of opinion here. What is council's pleasure on this? 25, 35, 30.
I think you need more info. Like, I would like a little more info. What I was saying is there's no data to support anything except what you said about first blush, it's 40. My subjective feeling is that, but if only a couple people have complained, I don't think we have enough to just, I don't feel comfortable with just changing.
Then I'll remind that we did receive a letter from a school teacher out of Chain Lake arguing the speed limit should be higher even before that location because she got a ticket going down Chain Lake. You remember that?
Pretty suggestive.
No, I'm just saying that. I mean, we should.
She went around the roundabout.
She got a ticket. And you remember
the
letter?
Yeah,
yes. And you thought it was ridiculous and it should be. I'm just saying that we don't base decisions off of. We need to base it off of the data, the science.
So I'm not really, the one thing about it, I'm not really hearing a compelling desire from the other council members to change 20 to 25. Is there, without voting, is there opposition to keeping it the way that it is?
I mean, I would need more data. Like, how many tickets have we given when people are speeding more? Are there accidents? Are looking at anything else? Are there lots of customer, you know, member complaints or citizen complaints?
Okay. Does council want more information, or do you want to just keep it at 35 for now?
I don't think it's 35 for now.
Just wondering. Okay. Okay. I didn't hear what you said, council.
Maybe we could just fundraise
on the help.
And that would be a slogan.
Okay.
Just put a line in.
Okay. So we will not bring back an ordinance unless there's opposition to what I'm saying. We will not bring back an ordinance that will change the sprinkler limit on Chain Lake. Is that correct? All right.
Yep.
Yeah, so you can always bring it back. Anything further on that one?
That was good.
Okay.
Next one. That's the left there. Okay. And as Councilmember Gamble mentioned, the. Okay. In 2003, the police department came to the city council and said that there's a lot of school kids that walk from the Blueberry area to Frank Wagner Elementary School. They walk along Columbia Street. There was no sidewalks for them, so that they thought that the speed limit should be lowered to 20 miles an hour. The city council thought that was a good idea and did that at that time. Since then, we have added sidewalks on the south side of the street, so there is a sidewalk there now. So would that be something that the council would like to move back to 25 miles an hour because the reason for making it 20 no longer exists?
Yes.
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 Okay.
Any opposition to coming back with that change? All right, seeing none, we'll come back with that change. D
is, there's been lots of talk from citizens, the police department, I think the mayor also, of when is it 20 miles an hour on Main Street. If you go all the way to the bottom, Mr. Ben, there's an app.
You're going to have to zoom out.
All the way to the bottom, keep going. You'll zoom out.
Right there.
Yeah.
How
much easier to understand.
Yeah. Hey,
Swanner?
No, that's good. So, right now there's a school zone. School zones by state law can only be 300 feet each side of where the crossing is or where the school is. So we have a school zone from basically the bus bar to Village Way. That's for the Park Place Middle School. And then we have here for the crossing at Frank Wagner. From there to there, and then the crossing going to Skydale Education Center is from there to there. There's also another school right here, the Christian School, that currently doesn't have one. That's another comment people have made, is how come other schools get safe crossings and they don't. So, and people come along here and they say, well, we don't know where it is 25 and where it's 20. You know, but can I go faster and then that get, you know, speed up again, slow down again? So. Is the council interested in making it 20 miles an hour from there all the way to there? 7:30 to 4. So basically make it a large area that is 20 miles an hour. Makes it easy for people to speed up, slow down, things like that.
You okay with one speed limit through the corridor, or do you like the way it is?
I'm managing to the exception.
We've had, go ahead, Councilmember Hanford.
So my kids, my three oldest kids all went to the Monroe Christian School, and they crossed the street at a crosswalk right there to use the church for the chapel thing.
Yep.
And I've gone to meetings at the school where they use the crosswalk and things like that, and it's always like, should we step out? Because they're afraid to. And so I'm all in favor of that. I don't think it makes any sense whatsoever that people go into a school. It is a school, and yet there's no school zone, so.
Okay.
So we just continue to the school.
Yeah, I mean, if you look at where that school's at and you go 300 feet, it bridges it.
People will be like about like that.
Right, so why would you have it?
Anything further, Councilor Hanford? Councilor Kemp?
Thank you. So we've got, so the proposal is just during what? School hours?
Yeah.
It'd be 20 miles an hour?
7 a.m. to
4.
7 a.m. to 4:30 p.m., I think.
Or 4.
Yeah. That's like other.
Excluding holidays.
Yeah.
And we'd have sign postings for that. That's the triangle. So as congested as downtown is, why would, if we're going to do that, why wouldn't we consider making 20 miles an hour downtown?
You could.
Because of the congestion, the people crossing traffic, the parking situation downtown. I mean, if people are going to get used to driving 20 miles an hour essentially from the bus barn to, I guess, that is that the little triangle, the old hospital up there?
Yeah, this is, that's the triangle building, that's Ellis Apartments, old hospital.
Right.
Yeah, so that's Madison.
That's Madison. Just carry it out through Main Street now, yeah. It, just a thought. I agree with Councilmember Hanford. I mean, if you've got that one section right there, and there is a school there, and there's a lot of kids coming out, it would make sense to have that area as a school limit. But I'm just thinking, why don't we just extend it? Would there be a reason why we want to keep it 5 more miles now? Definitely. I'm asking.
Yeah. I mean, just it is a. A comment, the city of Seattle actually just made their standard speed limit 20 miles an hour.
It's because you can only go 5.
Residential streets. That doesn't count.
Yeah. Okay. Anyway, in principle, I agree. I don't have a problem with that. I'll change that whole area for the school zone. But I would, if council does object, I'd like to consider the change to downtown as well. Please.
All right, sounds good. Thank you. Councilmember Kent, Councilmember Scarborough.
I was going to ask the same question. I don't know that I agree with Councilman Hanford on that, and Councilman Camp on making it all 20. And I would also consider making it 20 through town. And I'll tell you, I can tell the difference between when I do 20 and I do 25. I don't do 25 because there's just the cars backing out in front of Gino and that 2 blocks from the diagonals. The cars going in and out of the parallel parking. It just doesn't feel good for 25. But that's me, and I'm older than most things either. But you know, the youngsters are going to go, what are you doing? So, but I would consider it.
He's trying to be younger.
Yeah,
I'm holding on.
Okay.
Councilor,
come back. So I just want to make sure I understand, because you had mentioned that by state law we can only have a school zone 300 feet from the crosswalk.
Same thing, basically the same thing that you did on Columbia in 2003 when we were on the council. It's not a school zone, it's just a 20 mile hour speed limit.
Outside the purple areas.
That happens to be, and you still have a school zone at those other areas, but the speed limit in between is still 20.
Okay, so it's 20 miles an hour the whole time.
Right.
But then you still have the purple areas of the school zone?
Which allows you to double the fine and things like that.
Okay.
Yeah.
And that school zone is only 7 to 4:30?
Well, the 20 mile an hour
is 7 to 4.
I mean,
it's the whole time, but we're comfortable, but we still have a school zone within that.
Right.
so planes double between.
Yeah.
So you, what you would have would be a consistent forward order from one end to the other, where it would be 20 miles an hour throughout the whole stretch.
Yep.
But if you are speeding in the purple areas, because those are per se
during
school zones.
During school time, during the school zone time.
Correct. That's where then, in addition to speeding above 20, you'd also be in a school zone, so you'd be subject to potential additional fines. That makes sense.
Yeah, well, I mean, it just seems like a double-double. I mean, it's like 20, and then it's 20 within 20.
Right, so what a driver does today right now is you go in, you're driving 25,
right,
in the purple area,
so
and then you get out of the purple area,
down.
You're 25, you get back in another purple area, and you're 20, and then out for a short distance, you're 25. And
are people going to clearly know when where the school zones are? Because it's 20 the whole way.
Yeah, it's only marked.
It'll still be marked,
yeah.
But we're adding on
the
school zone for the Monroe Christians. Or we're not.
Question, that isn't up with.
Okay.
That's not under consideration right now.
Okay.
But there wouldn't be the, there wouldn't be a sign at the end of the 20 mile hour zone saying 25.
One of the comments I've heard is some people don't know where you can drive 25 again. If the whole corridor is 20, then from start to end you're going 20. And that's one of the comments that I've heard. I've heard people coming in speaking to the judge here because they got pulled over.
20 has a ticket.
Well, yeah, but they didn't know where the 25 was because it was 25 and 20 and 25 and 20 over the course of 1, 2, 3 different areas for the where it changes. That's all.
And how did that hold up?
I don't know. I didn't follow up.
Yeah.
Yeah. Bottom line is I didn't follow up. In fact, I think it was a recommendation from the judge that we consider making it 20.
Well, that's
20 to hold
that. It wasn't a recommendation from the judge?
Yeah, when she first got started, it was, you know, 3 years ago, from my recollection. But I remember more of this as we're talking. But, yeah, it was sometimes over.
Okay.
She recommended 20.
At one point in time, she's not a traffic engineer. She's not a...
Oh, she's staying all in last week.
It was 3 years ago. Councilmember Cutback, still have the floor?
I'm done.
Okay. Councilmember... Rasmussen.
Thank you. So I agree with the continuing during the 20 miles an hour through the school zones on Main Street to include Monroe Christian, and basically lump that all together. Continuation beyond that on Main Street, I think, is definitely worth another conversation. With the school zones, however, I do, you know, just beg the question, well, we're going to do this for on Main Street for, you know, the school, Monroe Christian, why not Village Way? Monroe Montessori. And then their campus on 179 now. So it's kind of one of those that we're going to do this for one school and make these school zones and split the other schools. So, you know, the conversation.
Okay. Sounds good. So I'm just going to do a time check. Time right now is 9:45. Remember to continue past time when you motion to continue past time. Councilmember Rasmussen, you still have the floor.
I don't know if that needs to be discussed for tonight or if this is just Main Street.
Well, certainly, right now it's just Main Street.
Okay.
But certainly from the conversation, if there's enough council members who'd like to bring it back for further discussion, certainly can. There's not a time frame on this item, and you know, we can bring it back. We can you can consider this and then come back and discuss the other one as well. Councilmember again?
Actually, I was up first.
Oh, I'm sorry, you were. Councilmember Gamble. Councilmember Gamble and then Camp and then Councilmember.
No, I just we are very. I get the concept of bridging here. And but you went exactly, actually, I was going to say it. So we're just kind of arbitrarily down. I mean,
yeah.
You can make an argument for any one of those streets. I could go down this way on the entrance end. I could go, I was going to say the Village Way, and then you got the Boys and Girls Club over there, and you got this. I mean, I would prefer to make decisions on this that is aligned just like, you know, on the other one that, hey, we've got logic that goes behind it. There's science behind it. It's not just us going, well, you know what, why don't we just continue it all the way down and then goes off of our because, I mean, I know I was joking earlier, but it really does make it sound like that we stayed at Holiday Inn last night and we're just kind of practicing as graphic, you know, engineers, to me.
Okay.
Because you, if we could do that in the farm, I think we should reduce that to 22, because you know, that's the way it sounds. Sorry.
Okay. No, no problem. Thank you, Councilmember Gable. Councilmember Kent.
Thank you. One of the complaints I've heard, and I have to be honest, most of the people I know are shooting down Main Street at 30 miles an hour. And they're popping through the school districts, and suddenly you're going 5 over to suddenly 10 over, and that's when you get the really nasty ticket. I just want to put that out there. I don't have a problem slowing all this stuff down here in schools. I'm curious, though, so why, is it because it's a private school? Is that why they, it's not considered a school district in front of them?
That's a good question.
It was in long time ago. We had what WCIA come out to talk to us about. Every once in a while they come out and give you suggestions on, you know, traffic orders and things like that.
Yeah.
They came out and said there's too many signs on Main Street, and so get rid of, since it's not really a, it's not a walking kind of school, it's more people who live all over who've driven to school.
Right.
So get rid of the school zone there. So that was in the mid to late
90s. Okay, so there's some statewide.
Yeah,
okay, so I don't know if we have that kind of limitation.
Yeah.
If you're going to, I just think in terms of clarity, because Main Street is such a big thoroughfare that people use, that if we can make it as simple as possible for people to understand that it, during school zones, it's 20 miles an hour, starting from the school, the bus barn, it doesn't have to go out to Main Street or out to downtown, but for that section, we go 20 miles an hour. And I just think it's more clear. Even when people are doing 25, how are the police handled as their business, but they won't be doing 30 miles an hour during the school time. As far as Village Way, that's probably something for another discussion. I mean, we have libraries, and like you said, Boys and Girls Club, a lot of child activities in that area. But we also have other child activities in other parts of the town.
That was my point.
Where
do you draw the line?
So, in my opinion, I'd like to focus just on Main Street for tonight and just go with the, let's make it 20 miles an hour section. That's it for me.
Thank you. Hey, Mr. Scarborough.
Well, as I said, the longer I said, ponder on what we're doing. If you make it 20 miles an hour everywhere, then nobody can go 25 miles an hour in the school time section. And that's not going to
work. But it's only during school hours.
I understand.
Okay.
That needs to be posted. So it's going to be 20 from the end of this purple line to the end of that purple line. Do we have to call it a school zone to say 20 miles an hour only in the school hour?
No.
But it's not a school zone, right?
No, it's not a school zone.
Right.
1 mile an hour speed zone.
Yeah, right.
As long as it's posted, people know. Between 7
and
4:30. Between 7 and 4:30.
And you can do that.
Yes.
Perfect. That's what you do at Columbia.
So. All right. Sounds good. So, is there, it sounds like I've got at least a couple council members, two or three council members that are okay with this coming back for West Main being proposed for 20 miles an hour.
Mm-hmm.
From one end of the purple all the way to the other end of the purple. Okay, so we'll go ahead and we'll bring that back for council's consideration. All right, what else do you have?
Go to E.
Which is?
Oh,
thank you. Ms. Atkinson will now be presenting.
Just trying to help.
Thank you.
This is actually just a clarification of the overweight parking prohibition exemptions. 2 years ago, I think it was, that we changed the 12,500 overweight parking to 15,000. This is just another section of the code that still says 12,500. So that's just a cleanup to make that there. We've also, in the same section, added, since we found out that we couldn't actually legally bring the trucks to this department. The exempt utility and government vehicles, and if you are picking up materials in our big truck, you can actually park in front of State 7-Eleven and unload your truck. That wasn't clear in this section to do that, so we've added those things. Any questions on that one? Okay. F, state law says that if you have manual parking on your streets, you have to do it by ordinance or resolution. So we're adding manual parking we have on Main Street.
That's funny.
G is a new section. Currently, there is state law says that the city engineer or the traffic engineer can limit parking on streets if they're less than 20 feet wide. There's no parking on both sides. The fire department has requested that we change that to a wider street, and in the particular instance was Allison Street, which is out in the off of 171st, Curry Road area, just north of 522. They said that it's 30 feet wide of pavement, and there's cars or vehicles parked on both sides of the street. It makes it hard for fire trucks, school buses to get through there. So they were asking for a regulation that actually says that the streets, we picked, if it's less than 26 feet wide, there's no parking on either side, and if it's less than 34, or between 26 and 34, there's parking on just one side. And if you scroll back down, scroll back down to the third map, way, way down.
Oh,
the map. Yeah, map. The map you haven't seen yet.
Keeps on going.
There you go. And then you might have to shrink that a little bit because they can't see it all. So based on that criteria, the red streets would be no parking, the orange streets would be parking on one side, green streets would be parking on both sides. This isn't granular enough to actually show some of the streets that are, I mean, it's coming.
What's the yellow parking, did you say? That's
a one side? One side, yeah. So red, yellow, yeah. Orange, one, and green, both. Some of the streets down here, even though the pavement width is small, there's no curb. So there's gravel on both sides, so there's still a lot of parking. Up in this area, the streets there do have curbs, so currently the people who live up there are parking on both sides of the street. This would limit them to one, just parking on one side, which had an impact on them. Same thing up in the farm, and a little bit in this area too. Some of those areas have already been designated that by specific motion on a case-by-case basis on the parking resolution. To that, so the question is, do you want to actually have a blanket requirement, which is actually what you had in prior to the adoption of the 2015 building codes or the fire code. There was we had adopted Appendix D, which said if a street is less than 24 feet wide, there's no parking on it. If it's 32 feet wide, there's only parking on one side. So this is kind of getting back to that. It wasn't really well enforced. It wasn't signed that way. So is this city council, you know, interested in doing that? You want more study on this, exactly which streets it would apply to, or would you just like to do it on a case-by-case basis when the fire department comes in and says you should limit it on Allison Street? We make the parking resolution say there's no parking on the east side of Allison Street.
What's the legend?
Green is parking both sides, orange is parking one side, red is no parking.
Okay.
More or less. Because there's some places. Well, there's some places.
Thank you. I'm sure that's supposed to be.
Some people have got some coming back around the show.
So we have 1 minute, still 10. Customer come back.
So that currently, right now, we allow parking on both sides, or that's what's happening everywhere.
Some places that you've already in the parking resolution said no parking.
Have already done that.
Already done that on a case by case basis, but
right.
This would basically make it so big, this specifically up in the farm, the foothills area.
Yeah.
All those orange streets would lose parking on half the side.
Yeah. So my opinion is I'm not willing to make a blanket statement right now that affects way too many people without more information on coming out. People are going to park in their residential areas, so it either has to be case by case or we have to look at this more closely.
Thank you. Councilor Scarborough?
Case by case, probably, but I employ people to drive through, although it's out in the county, you know, by the old golf course and that residential area. You can drive a bus down some of these roads when there's parking on both sides. Puts the bus right down the middle. And it's not something that can't be done. It can be negotiated, but it can cause some question in somebody's mind about who's got the right way. The law of gross tonnage will prevail, but not the kids on a bus. So I can see some areas where there's going to be some consternation about the chain. And like Patsy said, Councilman Cutback said, up in the farm and up in Sinclair Heights up there, that if you go down that road into Sinclair Heights, there's a place where there's parking on the right side of the road and it's supposed to stop and people don't pay attention to it. And there's only room for one vehicle to get through when they're parked on the right-hand side past the point where it says you're not supposed to park. I've driven the thing to
come. Sounds like a case by case.
Sounds like a case by case.
Okay, so we're coming up on 2 minutes till 10. Can you go back up to where did we leave off?
G.
And we have all the way through Hodo, is that correct?
Correct.
And we did, so we have to go.
Okay,
yes.
So I would propose, Council, that we continue this discussion and continue AB-010 at next week's meeting.
Mm-hmm.
Does Council have any concern about us continuing the conversation next week?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I just want to make sure everybody's fresh and engaged on this also. And there's a lot of material here. So if you have any questions over the next week, please feel free to go ahead and email Deborah, and we'll follow up with staff and get answers to questions. But we'll continue this next week. I think that's all we have this evening.
I move to adjourn.
Second. Thank you. We have a motion to adjourn to Councilmember Hanford, a second to Councilmember Rasmussen. Any discussion on the motion to adjourn? Seeing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Abstentions? Motion passes 7-0. Thank you very much. Have a great evening, folks.